Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green and Sams in Tallahassee.
And from The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
As officials work to ensure a tragedy like the school shooting in Connecticut doesn't happen in Florida, groups are arguing for both more and fewer guns in the state.
We have to ask ourselves, is that the type of society we want to live in? We have to go further and say, you know, we want our neighborhood safe. We want to obviously protect our property.
Will higher reimbursement rates lure more Florida primary care doctors to see Medicaid patients? The federal government thinks so, but others say not so fast.
That's suggesting that Medicare rates are attractive to providers, which is not necessarily true.
We'll also trek through the Florida Everglades and see how tourism leaders hope a celebrity chef will lure more visitors to Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan, sitting in for Tramell Gomes. This is Capitol Report. Following the tragic school shooting in Newton, Connecticut, Florida leaders are looking for answers about how to keep something like that from happening in their hometowns. But Regan McCarthy reports those answers span everything from tighter gun regulation to more guns in more citizen hands.
What's the best way to protect Floridians from tragedies like the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut? That depends who you ask. Representative Dennis Baxley, a Republican from Ocala, says he likes the idea of expanding the number of places where guns can be carried.
Making gun-free zones, while well-intentioned, desire to keep everyone safe, we have unintentionally, inadvertently, made them a target.
Baxley was part of a panel discussion on the topic hosted by the Orlando Sentinel and Fox 35 News. He's the sponsor of the Stand Your Ground law, which has received recent media attention in connection with the shooting death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, who was killed by self-appointed Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman back in February. And Baxley himself has gotten a lot of media attention lately for the solution he proposed for helping keep Floridians safe, which includes more guns in more places, like schools and government buildings, which are known right now as no-gun zones. That's sort of the opposite of Representative Bobby Powell's idea. Powell, a Democrat from West Palm Beach, is filing legislation that would let local governments restrict firearms at certain community events. It's a modification to a recent law that took away local power to impose stricter gun regulations than the state's. And Powell dismisses worries that a criminal who wants to get a gun into a protected area would find a way to do it.
That's always going to be a concern, that if a criminal wants to do something, they can figure out a way to get around it. But if we put these precautions in place, it prevents easy access. It prevents a simple and easy opportunity for people to come into a place and just start to commit extreme acts of violence.
And Representative Alan Williams says balancing the need to protect the Second Amendment rights of Florida citizens while making sure they're safe and feel safe requires a light tread. He says the Connecticut shooting had a big impact on families across the state.
You know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, is that the type of society we want to live in? We have to go further and say, you know, we want our neighborhood safe. We want to obviously protect our property. And believe me, I'm a advocate of the Second Amendment.
Williams, a Tallahassee Democrat, is sponsoring a measure in the coming session that would repeal the state's so-called Stand Your Ground law, which lets a person who feels threatened use deadly force without first having to retreat. He says really what happened in Connecticut and the measure he's working to repeal are different situations. And he insists his legislation doesn't take away from a person's Second Amendment rights.
It's by no means is an effort to remove or take away any liberties that folks who are licensed to carry or have a concealed weapon. This does not have anything to do with taking away any gun rights. This is about making our community safer, but at the same time allowing those individuals that want to protect their homes to still do that.
Meanwhile, several other proposals have been discussed, including measures that would give schools more money for safety officers or plans to direct more money toward mental health care services in the state of Florida. The topic is expected to be a big one in the coming legislative session as leaders work out whether more school funding, more school security, more mental health services, more guns in more places, or more restrictions for getting and using guns will provide the best balance of safety and security for Floridians. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Primary care physicians across the nation and in Florida are set to get more money for treating low-income patients as part of the federal health care overhaul law. But as Lynn Hatter tells us, even though the increases went into effect the first of the year, that does not mean those payments will start flowing immediately.
Right now, Florida is paying about 56 cents on the dollar to doctors who treat Medicaid patients, and many physicians don't participate in the program because of those low rates. For many doctors, it costs more to treat Medicaid patients than what they get back, and that's led many physicians in the state to either cap the number of Medicaid patients they see or not treat them at all.
Most physicians that I've spoken to would be quite willing to increase the percentage of Medicaid that they see if they didn't lose so much money.
Dr. Louis St. Petrie heads the Florida chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He says the reluctance of doctors to treat Medicaid patients is problematic because of the more than 3 million Floridians in the program, 800,000 of them are children. That's roughly a third of Florida's kids.
The normal pediatric practice would have about a third of their patients as Medicaid, whereas because of the low payment rates, most pediatric practices have to limit their number of Medicaid patients to 5 or 10% of their total practice. Otherwise, they can't afford to stay in business to give away that much money for a third of their patient load.
Part of the federal health care law ups the amount of money primary care doctors receive for treating Medicaid patients. Some 13,000 Florida primary care physicians are actively participating in the program, and there are 3 million Floridians on Medicaid. That works out to about 230 patients per doctor. Earlier in the month, extra federal money almost doubled what Medicaid has been paying to Florida doctors. The new rates bring reimbursements up to Medicare levels. Petrie says the increase will allow Florida primary care docs to almost break even, but not everyone believes that increasing the rates will be enough to get more of those physicians to treat Medicaid patients.
Yeah, I think that's unrealistic.
Dr. Marshall Kapp is a professor at the Florida State University College of Medicine.
Theoretically, Medicaid rates would come up to Medicare rates. That's suggesting that Medicare rates are attractive to providers, which is not necessarily true.
Medicare, which covers seniors, usually pays more, but it too still falls short of what doctors receive through private insurance plans. Kapp says as parts of the federal health care law continue to go into effect, it will increase the number of people with health insurance. At the same time, the number of doctors isn't growing as fast, and he's concerned that that could lead to a bottleneck at the doctor's office.
If we have indeed a number of new people who have access to coverage who don't have access now, there's going to be a lot of strain on the existing provider market. So it may be that I have to wait longer to get an appointment with my doctor because my doctor has a bunch of new people who want to see her.
Medicaid is jointly funded by the state and federal government, and the extra money needed to raise the reimbursement rates is coming from the feds. But there's another catch. In 2 years, the federal money for the reimbursement rate hike goes away.
You know, we at this time are to be paying this enhanced rate until December 31st, 2014. What it looks like after that, I don't have a crystal ball for that one.
Michelle Donkey is the spokeswoman for the Agency for Healthcare Administration, which oversees Florida's Medicaid program. When the money goes away, it would be left to Congress to decide whether to renew it. States could also voluntarily raise their rates, but given Florida's desire to reduce costs, that may be unlikely. Doctors could also be discouraged from taking in more patients if they don't see the higher rates immediately. The agency sent out letters to doctors saying some payments under the new rate structure may have to be made retroactively. Donkey says the state and federal government are still trying to get on the same page.
It'll take us a short period of time to kind of get that in place to make sure our systems are in place, our mechanisms. But like I said, we'll be paying for everything. We'll be paying the increased rate for services rendered. after January 1st.
But she adds the new payment rates should start flowing soon. It will still be a while before anyone is able to tell if the extra funding has been enough to sway primary care doctors into seeing more Medicaid patients. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, despite more interest from government officials, the struggle goes on to save Florida's River of Grass. We'll have two reports.
I don't think we'll ever be satisfied. I don't think we're ever going to see ultimate restoration, just based on the development within South Florida, Southwest Florida, the way the dikes and the levees and the canals that have been constructed.
Florida Governor Rick Scott says if the state wants to boost its exports, it needs to convince more manufacturers to locate in the Sunshine State.
We've had a focus of wanting to double the number of exports that we have through our ports. So in order to do that, you've got to have something that you're going to be exporting.
And Florida's hoping to boost tourism by funding a TV show starring a celebrity chef.
This gives us just a really neat way to highlight that in a unique format that otherwise you can't convey in a 30-second ad or a print ad or an internet ad.
Florida Public Radio's Tramell Gomes was in the Everglades this week in our first of two reports on the ongoing efforts to preserve this huge natural resource. Tramell attended the 28th annual Everglades Coalition Conference in Coral Gables.
Hey, what are you doing here?
I'm here. I'm surprised to see you here, too.
During Thursday's reception, Governor Rick Scott shocked everyone in the crowd by showing up and doing a brief meet and greet. A spokesperson for Scott said due to a scheduling conflict, he was unable to attend the conference in person. But it just so happened that one of his non-public meetings was in or nearby the Biltmore Hotel, where the conference is being held. Scott says he's happy about the latest Everglades restoration deal to clean up water pollution, which he personally pitched in Washington.
I'm really proud of the fact that we got a historic settlement done with the Everglades restoration project. We're going to be funding that project over the next 12 years. And we got a settlement done with Justice, Corps of Engineers, EPA, and Interior. So it's going to both increase the flow of water and it's going to increase the quality of water.
Everglades Coalition Conference co-chair Don Sheriff says she was surprised by Scott's visit, but she's happy he made the effort.
So certainly having him be able to stop by tonight and talk to many of us that are working Everglades restoration on the ground shows that his support is unwavering, and we're happy to see that.
But that support didn't always seem so unwavering. Scott broke long-standing tradition where, according to the Tampa Bay Times, since 1987, every time Florida has sworn in a new governor, one of his first public appearances has been to deliver a speech at the annual Everglades Coalition Conference. Scott didn't follow through, but Sheriff says his absence was understandable.
He was able to join us last year and provided a keynote address. The first year of his office, it was actually the weekend of his inauguration. So there was a conflict in scheduling. He wasn't able to join us for that one. And in addition to appearing tonight, he's also made a short vignette video that we'll be playing during the coalition conference.
When it comes to the decades-long effort to restore the River of Grass, Everglades Foundation CEO Eric Eichenberg says he's not satisfied with where things are now.
I don't think we'll ever be satisfied. I don't think we're ever going to see ultimate restoration, just based on the development within South Florida, Southwest Florida, the way the dikes and the levees and the canals that have been constructed. But what we're doing is looking forward for restoration. This is a generational project.
Eichenberg says it comes down to pushing for restoration projects and advocating for completion of those projects. On Friday, officials will highlight the C-111 Spreader Canal project. That canal serves to channel floodwater away from western Miami-Dade County during the rainy wet season. Along a long list of state and local leaders who will be participating in the conference, U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar will be delivering the conference keynote address tonight. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tramell Gomes in Coral Gables.
Federal officials and environmental leaders are also focused on the Everglades. Sasha Cordner tells us a bipartisan group of lawmakers in Congress is also focused on Florida's River of Grass.
It's something that I'm very passionate about and something that's a top priority for most of the folks in my district.
Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy, a new face in Congress, says preserving a historic site like the Everglades is one of his main goals. not only for himself, but also for House District 18, the South Florida area he serves. So he's partnering with another Florida Congressman, Tom Rooney, a Republican, on some legislation that he says would do some needed good in the area. Murphy says what it comes down to is improving the water quality, and one of the ideas they're talking about is preventing the disrupting flows of dirty water.
There's these discharges that leave Lake Okeechobee when the lake fills up to a certain level, and because of a failing dike that is at risk of bursting at the seams, they have to discharge the water, and they do it out the east and the west, and when it comes out through the St. Lucie River, it really causes a lot of problems. And not to mention the smell, and it's filthy, it leads to algae blooms. So bottom line is, how do we best prevent those discharges? And overall, how do we improve the water quality? And there's a lot that's been done, don't get me wrong, but it takes a lot of time, and unfortunately it is very expensive.
He says if something isn't done about the water quality, it will continue to affect areas like Florida's real estate, the fishing industry, and tourism. Murphy says these are all things Congress should be worried about, which is why he's all for the revival of the Congressional Everglades Caucus by two senior congressmen, Republican Mario Diaz-Balart and Democrat Alcy Hastings.
I plan on joining that caucus ASAP, and I do think that it's really a lot about education. It's about informing other members of Congress and informing the public about the urgency of the situation here and why it's so important to really so much of southern Florida. So I think if more people understood the importance of it, they would be more willing, when it comes to the appropriations time in Congress, that these projects will get funded.
And Don Scherz, the National Everglades Coalition co-chair, agrees. She says there's a 4-to-1 return on investment on Everglades restoration, and congressional leaders need to know. Scherz says with Republicans and Democrats working for the benefit of the Everglades this year can only mean more good things in the future to help with barriers to Everglades restoration.
Well, one of the biggest challenges that we have had is that Everglades restoration, when it was passed under the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan, rely on, as we designed each project, we would have to return to Congress and receive authorization, even though the project overall had already been authorized. And the trouble with that, it relied on a vehicle called the Water Resources Development Act, which traditionally passes every 2 years. However, Congress has not been passing Water Resource Development Acts over the last 7 years. And so we have had a challenge of how do we get the projects that are ready to go authorized so that we can begin construction.
Scherz says overall, despite some setbacks in the last 4 years, she's seen outstanding progress with restoration efforts and hopes to work with policymakers in the future. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Governor Rick Scott wants to eliminate the state's sales on the purchase of manufacturing equipment. As we hear from Florida Public Radio affiliate WJCT in Jacksonville, Kevin Mearshart reports Scott says eliminating the tax will make the state more competitive.
Flanked by employees at the Vistagon Johnson & Johnson's facility in Jacksonville, Scott says the Vision Care Company is just the kind of business that can benefit from the tax relief. The company is the largest producer of disposable contact lenses in the world. It produces and distributes lenses from facilities in Jacksonville and Ireland. Scott says Florida needs to eliminate unnecessary hindrances to manufacturing growth to be able to compete with other states.
Other states have not charged a sales tax on buying machinery. We've got to do the exact same thing. We have 17,500 manufacturing companies in our state, and they employ over 300,000 Floridians. Every time we help a manufacturer in our state, we get more jobs for Florida families.
What Scott wants to eliminate is the productive output requirement, which currently stands at 5%. Under that rule, a manufacturer must prove it would boost production to a 5% threshold to be eligible for a sales tax exemption on equipment. The requirement was reduced from 10% last year. Vistacon President Dave Brown says the tax relief will be a benefit, particularly in manufacturing sectors like his, where change can come rapidly.
Producing new innovative products requires investments, and costs are an important part of that decision-making process. The type of tax relief suggested today by Governor Scott could potentially offset the high cost of new machinery, which is vital to innovation and growing our business.
Jacksonville State Representative Lake Ray says he supports eliminating the tax on purchasing equipment. He says more manufacturing jobs will lead to more trade, which will benefit Florida's ports and transportation industries.
What's happened over the course of the last couple of years has been we've been taking a focus on freight mobility, on our ports, on logistics. We've had a focus of wanting to double the number of exports that we have through our ports. So in order to do that, you've got to have something that you're going to be exporting. So this is an opportunity to double that.
Governor Scott says he also wants to double to $12 million the funding for Quick Response Training, or QRT. The program helps train workers move into the manufacturing sector. Scott says as more manufacturing jobs are created, it's vital for Floridians to have skills to fill those positions. He says with more goods being manufactured and improvements to ports and transportation infrastructure, Florida can continue its strong export business.
In contrast to the federal government, we have a trade surplus, a $24 billion trade surplus. I've done 7 trade delegations around the world, 3 in Latin America, to Panama, Colombia, and Brazil, to get more manufacturing in Florida, more jobs through our ports, more jobs for Florida families.
Scott says he would like to see the sales tax exemption go into effect July 1st. He wouldn't give an estimate of what the exemption would cost the state in revenue, but says it would be offset by an expected budget surplus in the coming year. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kevin Mershart in Jacksonville.
Here are some other headlines coming out of the Florida Capitol this week. The state's local election supervisors are set to ask lawmakers to let them increase early voting after all the snafus that produced long lines at polling places back in November. That according to a summary of their legislative package that came out this week. The Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections said it would request that the legislature give county supervisors the option to allow up to 14 days of early voting. Lawmakers reduce the number of early voting days to 8 as part of a controversial elections bill that was approved during the 2011 legislative session. A bill that would require more cigarette makers to pay the state as part of its settlement with tobacco companies was filed this week. That measure, which has been pushed unsuccessfully for several years, is sponsored by Senator Thad Altman. He's a Republican from Vieira. That bill would hit one company in particular, which is Miami-based Dosal. That was not part of Florida's 1997 settlement with the cigarette industry that provided billions of dollars for the state. The Republican Party of Florida collected nearly $2.2 million in cash between November 2nd and December 31st. That dwarfed the $424,000 that was raised by the Florida Democratic Party. This all according to reports posted this week on the State Division of Elections website. The GOP raised a total of about $28.2 million in 2012, while the Democrats brought in less than half that, about $11.2 million. The Republican totals during the past 2 months were bolstered by contributions from lawmakers, political committees, and campaign funds. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan in for Tramell Gomes. Finally this week, are you ready to watch some TV, maybe accompanied by a tasty snack, and just possibly think about your next vacation at the same time? Well, a new TV show hosted by one of the biggest celebrity chefs could help bring more tourists to the Sunshine State. As Jessica Palumbo reports, that's what Florida's official tourism marketing company is hoping as it's financing the show Emeralds Florida.
Florida tourism promoter Visit Florida is hoping to kick it up a few notches with the help of one of the world's most recognizable chefs.
Bam!
Emeril Lagasse, who recently moved to Northwest Florida, is the star of the new show Emeralds Florida. It debuted on the nationally broadcast cooking channel this month. The network says it has 14 million viewers and is quickly gaining more. The first episode of Emeralds Florida highlighted the food of Orlando.
We're going to meet some of Orlando's best chefs and get to see them in action.
We'll also take you for a quick tour of the nightlife throughout Orlando.
This season's 13 half-hour episodes will take Emerald to cities from the Keys to Pensacola. And it's all in the name of supporting Florida's number one industry, tourism.
People spend a lot of money on going out to restaurants when they're on vacation. And this gives us just a really neat way to highlight that in a unique format that otherwise you can't convey in a 30-second ad or a print ad or an internet ad.
That's Visit Florida President and CEO Will Seckham. He says the show is part of a strategy of working in compelling storytelling into marketing efforts.
Emeralds Florida is a great example of kind of that storytelling on steroids.
Visit Florida is a public-private partnership. It gets money from the state of Florida and gets matching funds from local tourism boards and other business partners throughout the state. The company has invested $750,000 to be the presenting sponsor of Emeralds Florida and could put in up to $1.5 million. Seckham says it's a big investment, but Emerald is a big star. He says he saw the star power firsthand during a shoot in Tallahassee.
And it's not just to, you know, moms and women. It was one of the most surprising things to me was that a couple of big old burly bearded guys were walking down and like, you know, that's Emeril Lagasse. No way. So he appeals obviously to a lot of different niches. And again, allowing us as a state to promote some things that we might not necessarily be known for.
Then we'll head out into the Gulf for some fishing and we'll prepare our catch of the day. Actually, our two catches of the day.
That's from the second episode shot in the Panhandle's South Walton. Other episodes focus on the cattle industry and Florida agriculture. Mostly, it's about restaurants and bars, like one that Emeril frequents in Santa Rosa Beach called Stinky's Fish Camp.
He eats here probably around once a month, and normally he eats here on Sunday brunch. And he likes boudin and tamales, so he's a really big fan of our restaurant.
That's Stinky's co-owner and chef, Brandon Janka. He says he expects to see a 10 to 15% bump in business after his episode of Emeril's Florida airs. It happened when the 6-year-old restaurant was featured in USA Today, and he says that business boost has lasted for about 2 years.
This will definitely mean for Stinky's that we will be extremely busy after the episode is aired.
It isn't the first time Visit Florida has sponsored a TV show. Bass to Billfish on the NBC Sports Outdoors Network was another of its projects. And Seckham says Visit Florida measures its success by television ratings, web traffic, and social media buzz. For Emeralds Florida, so far, so good, he says.
It's going to be a fun show, and I was tweeting it all Sunday. So I was hashtag Emeralds Florida, and it was all over the place. So he had a lot of fans.
Emeralds Florida airs Sunday mornings at 10:30 Eastern on the Cooking Channel. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan in for Tramell Gomes. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org.
Capitol Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green & Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green & Sams in Tallahassee.
And from the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.